District 42 State Senator Mike Jacobson today for a legislative talk. How you doing, Senator?
Hey, real good, Corey. Thank you.
Is the legislature in session today or taking the day
off?
Oh,
No. President's Day, we're off. Yep, this is out. This is a long weekend for us because we had a Friday recess day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was back in North Platte on Friday for bank board meetings, but then I had to quickly get back to Lincoln to spend some time with my grandson. So we spent the long weekend here. I am going to go in the office today. I've got, of course, my ag data privacy bill is up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got people that still are coming in wanting to talk to me about possible changes. So I decided I'd go in the office today and meet with them. And it's interesting that it's been, I introduced the bill a year ago, and we've had a public hearings a year ago, and we had interim study. And yet here, the day before the hearing, we still would like to see this changed. And so that's pretty typical. But I'll listen to what everybody has to say, and these are primarily lobbyists. They're not constituents.
Okay.
I'd be taking it a little more seriously if they were constituents. So,
gotcha.
Well, let's say I'd take it a lot more seriously. So, anyhow. I'll hear what they have to say.
Yeah, your ag data privacy bill, let's start with that. And I know from past discussions, you feel pretty good about the potential of that getting passed. You made it a priority bill, as I understand, right?
Well, I will make it a priority bill. Yeah. I thought I'm gonna take it through committee. Even though it's coming through my committee, I still would like to see it exec on and passed out of committee. And then I plan to prioritize it and try to get it scheduled as ASAP and get it through the legislature. I brought it on behalf of the governor, and I know his office is very anxious to see it get passed. I know they had met. We met with them again last week, and they were wanting to know whether it was going to be my priority bill or not. And I said, "Well, I at this point, I intend to make it my priority bill." I had another senator talk to me, Senator Dorn, who had not named a priority bill yet, and he said, "Hey, Mike, I understand that you're thinking about making the ag data privacy bill your priority, but I would consider making it my priority bill if you want to save yours for something else." And so I said, I may consider that. And I think the governor's people are saying, no, we'd really like for you to keep it your priority bill. So I think there's people that kind of feel like I can maybe get it through the legislature a little quicker. So
we'll see
what happens.
Yeah, we'll hopefully get a unanimous vote out of the committee and get that moving forward. Of course, the advantage of designating a priority bill, obviously, is it guarantees it gets heard on the floor of the legislature and gets votes, right?
And it does. And actually, it's kind of classic. It used to be it was a guarantee. That since I've been down there, it's really not a guarantee. The priority bills are going to be heard before any other bill except a budget bill, but. But if things really get, if the filibusters come back and there's not much time left, we've had most cases now where even priority bills aren't getting heard. So you better get your priority bill designated early and get it to the floor early. Now, I've got three bills that are on final reading now, and I've got one on select file. And all three of those bills have moved through the legislature this year, new bills, without a priority designation, but it's because they were scheduled, they went through committee early, got them to the floor early. They're unanimous bills, non-controversial bills, and the speaker needed something to schedule to talk about, and so he put those bills up. But if you got a bill that's a new bill, might have some controversy, new programs in particular, he's probably not going to schedule those without a priority. And we're getting to a point where I believe that after this week, we're going to be hitting the halfway mark in the legislature. And I think that's going to require a priority to really get time on the floor.
Sure. 719, your bill, one of those that advanced last week to final votes, and it clarifies that rail parks can build supporting improvements that spill across their property lines and still spend state grant funds for their development. Talk about that a little.
Yeah, really, it's just a technical cleanup. I know it was brought to me really by Gary Pearson, because Gary really was the one who brought the rail park bill originally that Senator Groney introduced. And the way this works with the funding is that there's match funding, but under the original rules, it said that the rail park must own the land that they build on and that they get a request reimbursement for the matching program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, what they're needing to do is extend the rail line onto UP land to connect up to the main line.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't own that land, meaning we're going to have to get an easement to put the rail line in. Same thing is true with natural gas line. We're going to need to run a natural gas line across land that we don't own. So well, we feel like that obviously the rail line is integral to the rail park, and we can't run the rail park without that line.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seemingly was an oversight when it was put together that said we had to own the land as long as we can lease it or we can control it in some other fashion, that should be the same. So that's really what the bill does, is it makes a technical change to say that we can lease the land or have an easement to do a project that's required to make the rail park work, and it would also be eligible for reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty simple bill, a lot of support. Really no objection through the legislature, and so I expect that as soon as he has a final reading vote, I'm sure it'll be this week, he'll have a round of final reading and select file votes again, and these three bills, 719 is one of them, will get heard and passed and sent to the governor's desk. It does have the E clause on it, so 90 days after the governor signs it, it becomes law.
Good. Another bill that advanced and won second round approval last week was Senator Tanya Storr's 663. That would set a shot clock on counties to approve conditional use permits for livestock feeding operations. If I remember, you're on board with that.
I am, and I know there's a lot of county officials that have a lot of indigestion, but I think they need to understand that you know, when it comes to development, time is money. And I know sometimes I was a little frustrated back many years ago when we were trying to get some project done in North Platte, and we needed the zoning committee to meet. And the head of zoning, planning and zoning at the time, this was before our current planning and zoning director, who's great, I might add. He was going to go on vacation. He said, well, we only meet once a month, and I'm going to be gone this month, so we're going to go 2 months before we meet. So you'll have to wait till then. And I said, well, have you ever heard of, like, a special meeting? Oh, we don't want to do that. And I said, well, that's a problem, okay? Plain and simple, that's a problem. So one of the problems with the shot clocks, and I think Senator Storr and I have talked about that, and she's very much aware of it, having served on the county board in Cherry County, she understands that you need a completed application. You need all the information. So if we can get all the information and all we need to do is make the decision, the shot clock should absolutely apply, because what she found and witnessed up there was county boards that would just sit on it. They'd get an application and say, I don't know that we want to do this. It meets all the requirements, but we don't know we want to do it, so we're just not going to act on it. Well, this forces them to act on it. Now, Now, they can come back and deny it, but then they're going to have to give specific reasons as to why they denied it. And if those can be fixed, then it has to be approved. And so the concern is that if you lay out a set of clearer guidelines as to here's what it takes, you go ahead and raise your capital and get your project ready to go, and you apply for zoning, and you should be able to get, you should be approved if you meet all the qualifications. And so that's really what her bill does. And I'm trusting her instincts as a former county commissioner that it meets the pieces that she believes need to be in front of the county board in order to make a decision.
Do you think it has a good chance of passing?
Yeah, it'll pass.
It'll pass. Got the votes. Okay.
Once it gets through two rounds, unless it's been filibustered, the third round is probably going to even be a voice vote.
Okay.
So,
all right. Another reprimand taking place. Executive board last week decided to reprimand Michaela Kavanaugh for tearing down the posters, which you talked about a few weeks ago on this show. She got upset with some PragerU posters, I guess, commemorating the country's 250th anniversary. Not very patriotic, to be sure.
Well, the problem, and you got to understand, is that her vision, and unfortunately many like her, their vision of the history of the United States is different than right. The rest of us see it. Okay, and evidently we should not be proud of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That our country is a bad country,
yeah,
and that we've done all these horrible things, which I understand. I understand we had slavery, as they did in biblical times, as did many, many other countries.
Yeah.
Okay, was that bad? Absolutely, it was bad. Okay, but let's understand, Democrats and Republicans had slaves. They were slave owners. And that did ultimately, as I recall, a Republican president repealed slavery, right. and we ended up learning from that, and that's how countries build themselves. And but it does get pointed out in history, and mm-hmm. So PragerU had brought the big thing is that they're a conservative university, and they had worked through, I think, really, Trump had some hand in that, but ultimately they had these posters made. They went through the proper channels. They came to the Capitol Commission. Capitol Commission's responsible for the environs of the Capitol. So the Capitol building itself and all the grounds around the Capitol are managed by the Capitol Commission. And they're the only ones who can approve any changes to the Capitol building, including hangings on the walls. I would tell you, as an example, in my office and every other senator's office, you do not put a picture on the wall. Okay, you would be disturbing the walls of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
Every senator knows that. There is a specific, whatever that is, puke yellow paint is the only paint that can be on the walls, okay? So you cannot change the paint colors, paint schemes. Mm-hmm. They're standard. And so our pictures are literally suspended from the ceiling with a small wire, really fine wire, and that's done by Capitol staff. So if you have a picture to be hung, here's what I have, I want it hung here, and they hang it for you. So everybody understands the strict protocol. So Prager University went through the process of getting permission from the Capitol Commission, and personnel from the Capitol Commission actually put up these posters on the walls. They actually installed them themselves, the Capitol Commission did.
Mm-hmm.
So Senator Kavanaugh showed up first day of session, saw these posters, got upset because she didn't think that she was just upset because it was Prager University.
Right.
And you could have said anything and it wouldn't have been right. So she starts tearing them down. I mean, literally ripping them off the wall, gathering up and putting them in her office. Well, you know, there are video cameras. There's a very good video camera system in the Capitol. We may allow, we may not be overly secure and let and screening people at the doors, but we do have a good camera system.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, no, people were just appalled when they saw it happening. And then Capitol Security came, and they got her, and they were, and actually the State Patrol was ready to put her in handcuffs. And my understanding is the Speaker got involved and said, hey, let's just maybe pull it back here a notch. And so they did not arrest her, which in retrospect they probably should have, right there at the time at the scene when that was being done.
Mm-hmm.
So this was happening about the same time that Dan McEwen was going through his issues. And so the exec board decided that they probably wanted, they needed to do something with Kavanaugh, but they weren't sure that the optics were going to be good to do the two together. We were getting a lot of pressure to do something, and we planned to do something. She strongly defended herself initially on the floor and otherwise,
mm-hmm.
saying that what she did was perfectly fine, that she's a stickler for rules, and that nobody got permission to put this on the wall. Well, then later she found out that they did, and that they followed the rules. She didn't. Then when about the time she had gotten word that we were probably going to do something as an executive board, she came to me and other members of the executive board on the floor, individually, profusely apologized, and I will never forget the words she said. I am prepared to take whatever punishment, if the exec board decides to reprimand me or censure me, I would accept that because what I did was wrong, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I remembered that, and other exec board members remembered that as well. Well, a week ago, we decided that we had learned that the county sheriff was not going to do any more action on the issue, on the case. So we basically, the reason we waited to do something was because we wanted to see what the county sheriff's investigation came up with and what he did.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he did nothing, we decided we needed to act, and so we were going to act. And instead of doing a censure, we did a reprimand, which is more like a slap on the wrist.
Right.
But it's a letter that's formally read into the record in the legislature. So she was told the day before that this was going to happen. So she was there on the floor. They read it across. She immediately punched in, asked for a point of a personal privilege, and then had a prepared speech basically to say that she apologized and so on, and then went off on this rant of that we didn't talk to her, that she, this is a total surprise, and that she thought this was behind her.
Hmm.
And it was like, and we're all sitting there like, no, this is a lie. You're not being honest with the public. But
yeah.
There again, it's a game you play where if you get on the mic and convince the public, this is what happened. The truth really doesn't matter.
Right.
And so it's over with now, and not going to go any further. But it's just it's frustrating. You know, we seem to have some of the same people that were constantly dealing with something or another, and it seems pretty juvenile at times. But I'm reminded of my new grandson, how it's very important that discipline at a young age is important because it will carry over into adulthood. And I'll
very
leave
much.
It at that.
Final comment. I saw this article on the unicameral update website about a two-tier property valuation system being proposed. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am. And it's a system where We will still value property like we've been valuing it, but then it's kind of a Prop 13 from California type system where mm-hmm. when you buy a property, whatever you buy it for, that's the valuation, and it can't go up all the while you own it unless you make major improvements or something to it. It's along mm-hmm. the same style as Prop 13 in California, which had a lot of problems with it. It impacted home sales because nobody would sell their homes because their value was lower.
Right.
What this becomes is people say, well, it's a property tax reduction. Well, it's a property tax reduction for the people who get into a home and it goes up in value. But it really is a property tax shift. It really shifts the valuation to other properties. It also has an impact on mill levy. At the end of the day, you're still collecting the same taxes, generally from the same people, but those who maybe over time, you could see that your value goes up less, and you would get a little savings, but then everyone else would make up the difference. So I think there are a lot of plans out there, and I'll probably write an article about my thoughts on it. But, you know, at the end of the day, 2 + 2 = 4. And you got to understand that valuation times mill levy equals taxes collected. So if you come up with X amount of tax that you need and you limit the value, that means you're going to have to make the mill levy higher
right.
in order to collect the same amount of taxes. It's not a difficult concept to understand that at the end of the day, if you don't reduce spending, okay, then you're going to have more revenue. So if your economy doesn't grow at a faster pace than spending, then your taxes are going to go up. That's really the sum total. It's really about all you need to know about taxes. And so we really have to decide who should be paying the taxes and how much they should pay based upon the type of tax they have. Right now in our state, we have a very heavy, heavy reliance on property taxes. And that's why I've been a proponent to consider removing some exemptions on sales tax, because sales taxes could afford to pay more, which will allow us to have less property taxes, and yet that always seems to hit a brick wall. I would also tell you that all of these plans out there that are monkeying with the valuation, you've got the Apple plan, you've got these other plans yep. out there. At the end of the day, they take you almost all the way. I remember as a kid in school, in grade school, we had to show our work on a math problem. Well, I'm asking the people, like with the Apple plan, to show your work, because you're going to limit the valuations and you're going to take us through most of it, and then you stop and say, now the legislature has to balance the rest of this. Well, that's the hard part, is that that's the part we've been trying to do, is how do you get the additional revenue when you go in and arbitrarily cut values or limit mill levies,
mm-hmm.
then where do you get the rest of the revenue? Well, you guys go figure that out. Okay, thank you. So we have hearings like last week. I thought I was in a time warp. One day we had hearings that were dealing with eliminating sales tax exemptions, raising more sales tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody came in and testified, if you put sales tax on my service, I'm out of business. Tattoo orders
mm-hmm.
lined up. Well, nobody will ever get a tattoo again if we apply sales tax to it, evidently. and some would say that's a good thing, but I'm not going there. And then you come back the next day, and we have this plan for this differential property valuations, and you got people saying, well, this won't work, and that we're paying too much in property tax. You got to get our property taxes down. Okay, well, if we're going to have less property tax, how are we going to get more sales tax if every time we try to repeal a sales tax exemption, they fill the hearing rooms on you're going to drive me out of business because my clients can't afford to pay another 7% on top of what I'm charging them. Mm-hmm. So haircuts was the other one that it's going to be a sanitary issue because people are going to be eating haircuts at home. That's unsanitary. And we just can't afford, And I did ask, I said, well, so what's the range are you seeing in prices for haircuts? Well, they're probably anywhere from $7 to $40. I said, guys, that's a big range. It sounds like there's a lot of elasticity in the price of a haircut. Oh, no, no, there's people that have to have the high-end haircut, and then there are people that can't afford more than a $7 haircut. And if you charge them a sales tax, they're going to quit getting haircuts. So, and it's going to be a sanitary. But are they going to get them at home? They're going to buy home clippers. And I guess there's going to be some ugly haircuts out there is probably the downside. That's the moral of the story.
I would argue there's already some ugly haircuts out there, so, wherever it's coming from. Not to get into this too deeply because we're almost out of time, but on the Apple plan, they're touting this LB 1183, which would reduce the taxable valuation from 100% to 50%. That's really not doable, is it?
Well, no, because here again, look, 2 + 2 = 4. If you cut the valuations in half, you have to double a mill levy to get the same revenue. However, under this plan, as an example, let's take school property taxes. The school property tax lid is $1.05.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of North Platte Public, I think they're at 93 cents. So if you cut the value in half, they can't double a mill levy because of the lid.
Right.
So where are they going to get the rest of the money that they need to operate? Well, evidently, you just got that. This is the frustration. Well, legislature, you're going to have to figure that out. Well, first of all, the school board's going to have to figure that out. Well, it's not a problem to solve. You can't do that kind of gargantuan cut and expect to not have major, major problems with the educational system. So, legislature, you go find the money, okay? Well, don't bring me a plan that doesn't solve it all the way to the end. Okay, you need to tell us where the extra money is going to come from, or you need to tell us exactly what are they going to cut that seems plausible to do so that we can get there. And nobody wants to do that with their plans, but there's a lot of plans out there that are just, this is the solution. It's the only plan. But they don't take you all the way through the plan. They just take you part of the way through, and then that political subdivision or the legislature are going to have to figure out what you do with this major hole that they've created. So,
yep.
So I put it on the stack of others that are, you got a good start. If you can solve the rest of the equation, I'm all ears.
Well, and then there's another bill that would establish a $50,000 minimum base salary for all Nebraska teachers. I tend to believe the fair market, let the market system work, and if people aren't making enough money, look for a better paying job. I guess I've always been that
way.
You know.
And the other thing is, I was a teacher many, many, many years ago, and you have a salary scale that the teachers' union negotiates.
Right.
They have steps up, and they have years of service, and now you're coming in and tinkering. You're saying the minimum salary is $50,000.
Uh-huh.
Well, then what are you going to do with all these steps and all the things that have been negotiated by the teachers' unions? And there again, where's the money going to come from? Well,
right.
Then ultimately they were talking, well, the state would have to step in. Really, with a $417 million budget deficit, tell me where the state's supposed to get that money from?
Uh-huh.
If it were simple, it'd already be done, okay? That's what I think people need to understand, is that you've got to be able to think through what all the consequences are. And at the end of the day, we want to try to do things to generate more revenue by growing the economy and by cutting expenses where we can.
Yes.
But those are the two best solutions, rather than figuring out who we're going to shift the tax to.
I'm on board with that for sure. Senator Jacobson, thanks for giving us half an hour of your time this morning. We really appreciate it. Have a good day. And
I will. I'm going over to see that little grandson here in a few minutes.
Good. So. That makes it a good day automatically, doesn't it?
It will. Yes, it will. Thanks a lot.
If they want to get a hold of you, they always can send you an email or call your office.
They can do that. Yeah, that'd be right. And 402-471-2729. If you call, that's a good way. You can generally catch Christina.
Mm-hmm.
She'll answer a lot of the questions that you have when you call in. And I know she has a lot of regular phone calls with a number of people in the district. And probably the thing she likes the most about her job is she gets to know a lot of people that call in. So she's very good about responding. So. No, happy to hear from you, and I would tell you that there'll be big hearings tomorrow. The brand bills are up tomorrow for hearing at 1:30 in Ag Committee, and I know there are a number of people coming down. I'm going to be in Banking Committee. I won't be able to be a part of the that committee hearing,
mm-hmm.
but I would encourage people to do online comments. The one bill brought by Senator DeKay is a good bill. I don't think you're going to like Senator Hansen's bill. And so I would encourage you to, his bill is LB 1258. Look it up, LB 1258, and I think you'll agree that it basically gets the brand bill, and it's not something, I would have a hard time finding someone living north of North Platte on a ranch that thinks it's a good bill. So,
okay.
I think I understand what you're looking for here, and it is not 1258.
So, well, thank you, Senator. Your email is mjacobson@leg.ne.gov. So a couple of ways to get a hold of you. We appreciate the work you're doing for your constituents back here in the North Platte area, okay?
Thank you very much, Corey.
Thanks, sir. Have a good one.